Hello. Here is the SMRN podcast. Bashet, yeah. And me, Seeing. We are two SMRN members.
I'm Farshid Kazemi, and I am going to be a postdoc fellow at SFU at the School of Contemporary Arts with Professor Laura Marks. And seeing you already are, yeah. So you can tell us a little bit as well.
I studied my postdoc last year.
Yeah.
And my own research interest is at the intersection of contemporary media arts and Chinese aesthetics, especially how to understand the experiential side of contemporary media arts from traditional Chinese thinking.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
How about you?
Yeah, for my research, I'll be doing something related to kind of intersection between Islamic philosophy, early optical media, like the magic lantern and shadow puppetry. And I think that's what we should talk about. That would be our theme today, is something that I think Persian, Iranian culture has in similarity with Chinese culture. And then we'll talk about that. There was also an influence of Chinese, shadow puppetry into Iran, which I will be also investigating later in my research. So, yeah, I think, and you were interested in shadow puppetry, mm-hmm. in your research as well.
Yeah. So shadow puppetry and shadow theater is the theme we're going to talk about today, as we both have this shared interest in this study of area.
Exactly. And I was thinking maybe we could, perhaps start with way of how I was in my research. I'm very interested in the way, for example, in one of the areas, one of my chapters that I'm currently thinking about is what I call the shadow theater of philosophy.
Mm.
And it's basically like how it goes back to Plato's cave, right? Mm. And we had that one time in our discussions at the SMR meeting.
Yes.
And what is often kind of gets forgotten about in the allegory of the cave in Plato's Republic is that whilst Plato is describing this quite beautiful allegory of the cave, he's using the technology, let's say, of the shadow puppetry as a means to describe of those shadows that are projected on the screen or the wall of the cave.
Mm-hmm.
And then through that, he comes through a theory of forms and about the nature of physical reality, and then of course the reality of the world of forms, right?
Fantastic.
And that this world is really the shadows of the real world of forms. So the it's a copy, a shadow reflection of those forms.
Mm-hmm.
And this enabled, so in a way through shadow puppetry, he was able to think philosophically about the world,
mm-hmm.
and its constitution, how it's structured. And I thought that to be very fascinating, because in the Iranian Islamic context as well, like poets like Omar Khayyam, where we have some of the earliest reference to a kind of what is called magic lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll read that as well, which I think maybe will be interesting, where Khayyam says, "For in and out, above, about, below, 'tis nothing but a magic let the shadow show. Played in a box whose candle is the sun, round which we phantom figures come and go."
So beautiful.
Yeah. So it's a very fascinating way of using the medium of magic lantern to think about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know in Chinese shadow puppetry, there's lots of beautiful, and as well, like I think you were telling me about the story as well, like the emperor,
shadow play.
And okay. How like these are so interesting, and they're related to. Maybe you can tell us about the origins and a little bit about the shadow puppetry in Chinese and what you're interested about in it.
All right. Let me just start with the story, because
yeah.
It's really a very interesting story.
For sure.
So it is said and written on the Han book that the tradition of shadow play goes back to Han Dynasty. Mm-hmm. There's this Han Emperor of Wu, that's how we call him.
Mm-hmm.
He has a wife that he loved very much.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife died in her early age.
Mm-hmm.
So the emperor was really sad. And one of the ministers trying to find a way to make him happy again.
Mm-hmm.
And one day when he saw a group of children playing in the sun at noon,
mm-hmm.
On the playground, he noticed the shadows
mm-hmm.
moving while the children was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he found that very interesting. He got the idea, try to reconstruct the figure of the emperor's wife via shadow play, to use the shadow puppetry, draw the figure of the emperor's wife,
mm-hmm.
and project it onto the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So the emperor was really very happy to
mm-hmm.
see the figure of his wife, almost like relive again
mm-hmm.
through this form.
Yes.
And
that's amazing.
So and I find it's a very touching, beautiful
yeah.
Story, although we are not sure if it is the true
the
original
yeah.
or not, but it is
but nevertheless, yes.
It is a very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, this shadow play becomes very popular,
mm-hmm.
Both in the court or among usual people's
the nobility or just the common people, like
common people,
yeah, yeah.
If it becomes so popular,
wow, okay,
and it becomes part of the people's life,
exactly.
For me, what attracts me most is always this idea of that shadow play or shadow itself is kind of in between what is real
mm-hmm.
And abstract
mm-hmm.
or what is visible and invisible.
Mm-hmm.
It is very difficult to categorize shadow
mm-hmm.
or this shadow play into one category.
One or the other. Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
And I know this is also, there is also similar philosophical idea.
Yes,
in
yes.
Islam.
In Islamic thought, it's very interesting because as well, like this, again, goes back to also the ideas of in relationship to notions of, you know, perhaps even going further than Islamic thinking as well into ancient ideas of magic
mm.
and the conjuring of spirits as
mm-hmm.
shadows
mm-hmm.
and how the early shaman and magicians and really this is really the origin of cinema
mm.
and there's a beautiful poem by actually Jim Morrison, who was actually a student of cinema at UCLA before he became the singer of the Doors
mm-hmm.
and what I should like to read that, and he refers to the shadow play, and he seems to have really, you know, studied it. It's a kind of a poetic expression, but he refers to China and India, and I think it's
mm-hmm.
worth to kind of allude to it.
Mm-hmm.
He says the modern East creates the greatest body of films. Cinema is a new form of an ancient tradition,
mm-hmm.
the shadow play.
Mm-hmm.
Even their theater is an imitation of it. Born in India or China, the shadow show was aligned with religious ritual, linked
mm-hmm.
with celebrations which centered around cremation of the dead.
Cremation of the dead.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So these rituals, religious rituals, these magical rites, which were practiced in ancient India, China, and I think particularly as well Indo-Iranian heritage in this relationship. And China, also, we know that Iran may have a nativist or indigenous tradition of shadow play, but we know that also there was Chinese influence
mm.
on the development of shadow theater in Iran. But when and exactly this happened? Did it happen in the pre-Islamic period, which I think is likely,
mm-hmm.
or in the post-Islamic period? And so those are points of investigation that still remains to be inquired. And I think what's amazing is that, like, you know, in the early, in these magical traditions where people were thinking about, like, the conjuring of shadows, so these invisible shadows, and they would go to magicians. Like, there is an actual reference to in an Egyptian magical papyri called the Leyden Papyrus, and has this really fascinating quote, which I like to quote for us.
Mm-hmm.
It says, "Pound a hawk's egg with myrrh, put it on your eyes, you will see lucky shadows."
So cool.
And it says, "Head and blood of a hopoi, paint your eyes, then you will see them."
Oh.
Isn't that amazing? So
yeah. You
see that this, in a way, the shadows, and in Islam as well, like in Shiite Islam, you know, in the Shia Islam, the son-in-law of the Prophet Ali and his descendants, who are called the family of the Prophet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ahlul Bayt means the people of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And these figures who are called Imams, in the metaphysical traditions, in the traditions ascribed to the sayings of these imams, was that they were like pre-existent shadows.
Oh.
They're called azla,
mm-hmm.
right? The Arabic is actually translated to shadows,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they are like pre-existential apparitional forms or shadows, right? And so there are many different fascinating ways that shadows, again, evoke kind of spirits,
mm-hmm.
you know, both spirits of, you know, perhaps already of the dead,
mm-hmm.
right? But also of beings who existed before this world, like the Imams, for example. So this fascinating heritage of cinema is really, in a way, not in theater, in the arts, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's really in the occult, in the magic,
mm-hmm.
and in ritual, and in religion,
yeah,
and in shamanism.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And not just some entertainment.
It wasn't just some entertainment. And so our fascination, I think, and that heritage is somehow... has always been in its optical or technological advancement.
Mm.
So in a way, the technological advancement of the media, which was to project some kind of shadows which had movement, which would, let's say, simulate movement and life, right?
Mm.
Was the goal. And the development of cinema was, in a way, slowly, of course, it lost in some ways that early understanding,
mm-hmm.
and tradition,
yeah.
and it became more enmeshed with a kind of rationalization of how to develop this
technology.
But nevertheless, I don't think it really disinherited some of this magical dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember you were saying in one of our meetings in the workshop,
mm-hmm.
where remember you said that the first reception of cinema, for example, in China, what did they call it? They referred to it with magic, like with the shadow theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the term, by the way, in Chinese for shadow theater?
Actually, before the introducing of the modern film technology,
mm-hmm.
there's a strong tradition of theater play.
Theater
in
play,
China.
Yes.
So when this new technology was introduced into China, Chinese people were feeling very fresh and curious about this new thing.
Yes.
And invented a word that combined this new technology and old theater.
Yes.
So
the
word first came out was yingxi.
Uh-huh.
And it's a combination of yin and shadow and xi, play.
Wow, there you go, yes.
And the very first film, arguably, was actually not made by a real director. There wasn't the idea of film director at the time, there's this person who running a photograph house. It was the place who take photograph of people.
Right, right.
And, And then...
A photograph studio.
He is a huge fan of Peking Opera at the time. And when he saw this new technology, he tries to preserve the play of his one of his idols. So there's this strong desire to make the play longer, to last it for future generations. In his first drive to make this first film.
Yes, wow, that's amazing. And so, yeah, so in a way, that's kind of similar in some ways, like with the early references to cinema in Iran too, because in Iran, when the Shah, the Muzaffaruddin Shah, he was a Qajar, one of the Qajar monarchs, the son of Nasiruddin Shah, and when he went to Paris, and he was that's when he was first exposed to cinema. And he has a travelogue that he's written. And even though he uses the, at that time, the current Western term, cinematograph, in relationship to it, but he also refers to it as the magic lantern. In the Persian, is Chiragh-e Jadu. So the term Chiragh-e Jadu or magic lantern is one of the first ways that Iranians
understood
the relationship to the early cinema.
Oh, cool.
So even though they still refer to it as the cinematograph and so on, but they also alluded to it as the magic lantern or the Chiragh-e Jadu, right? Or Fanus-e Khiyal, which is the old, as I said, remember the magic lantern that from the time of Khayyam. And the word Chiragh-e Jadu is also goes all the way back to medieval times in Iranian literature. So, in a way, like just like China, our first encounter with the technology of the cinema was to also allude to a native tradition, and in that way to understand it at that with that background, right?
Exactly.
And so that's quite amazing that you know. So it just goes to show you those indigenous traditions. Also helped, you know, these cultures to begin to understand and have a new relationship to the technology of the cinema, which was quite fascinating and new to them.
I'm curious, because we talk about this introduction of this new technology and how it was received in the tradition.
Yes.
I know in China that when this film technology was came in, a lot of directors are facing with the problem how to combine the like theater play or traditional Chinese way of this kind of
play acting
or play acting
how
to combine this or adjust it and to make it also be able to appear on a film setting. Is it the same case?
That's an interesting question. In Iran, you know, it was very fascinating. The beginnings of the introduction of cinema first came really into court culture. So the king's court. Because that's when the king asked his court photographer, who was Mirza Ibrahim Khan, to buy some of the cinema technology and the camera to bring back to Iran. He asked him to buy it so we can bring back to Iran. And of course, first it came really through him, and he was the first really Iranian director. And he shot some scenes, kind of like real, like, you know, kind of actuaries, you know, kind of like just, you know, events that were happening in the life of the king. And so when they came to Iran, this started in the court. And then as soon as like it was starting to take on popular form and it went outside of the court, people were also, the religious people who had a tradition of a religious theater called the Passion Play, Taziyeh. And these people were actually against the introduction of cinema into Iran, because they you know, it was a very religious culture, that and they felt that this will threaten like, you know, the Taziyeh or the Passion Play, and that people may not go anymore to these Passion Plays and see them. So some of the first people that were against the cinema were people who were either actors or writers in relationship to the Passion Theater. But and then also, of course, the earliest film, the silent film, was also about the problem of cinema. So like where the religious class would have this, you know, issues with the cinema. And so it's called Haji Agha, the actor of cinema, right? And so he's a religious cleric, and he, through the story, he eventually kind of becomes like convinced, okay, it's not so bad. Like cinema is not so bad. So in a way, this film is trying to change people's minds, and also even the religious class's mind, about the usefulness and importance of cinema, that is not morally corrupting and so on.
Is there a particular type of cinema that's also conveyed a moral meaning inside?
It slowly began to develop those types of films, and certainly films that were considered morally suspect were and this is the history of the history of censorship in Iran, which has in almost every period, there was some kind of censorship. And with all the, I think the world over, almost everywhere, has the history of cinema is partly a history of censorship. What Deleuze calls cinema. What is he saying? He says cinema is a long martyrology, meaning there's a lot of people who have been martyred because of cinema and what they wanted to do and present and show and so on. And so there was a lot of martyrs to the love of cinema and to the lack of bringing cinema to the people. And but yeah. So I think with this, we've come to perhaps to the end of our discussion, and
it's already exceeding.
Oh yeah, our
expected to talk.
Oh my goodness! Okay,
this is such a rich and fantastic area.
Yes, yes, we can talk about it for another hour
for
easily.
Hour, for hour. Yeah. So,
thank you so much, C.
Thank you.
Yeah, look forward to listening to other
episodes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.